gentleman Josh Singer.
And Tom
McCarthy?
Huh, just me?
Oh, you poor
guys. Supporting people.
Sorry, guys. I'll do what I can to help you out.
Josh, was there a big I mean, this is an inside baseball thing. You know what I mean? We're looking at the work progress. Was there concern about how to make that interesting, or was the story compelling enough and the people compelling enough that you knew that people would hang in there for the minutiae of what it is to be a writer?
I think it was very quickly apparent that the story was fascinating, and the way they broke this story was just such a great, to put it bluntly, a great procedural. Having spent some time in procedural television, it was clear that this was the best procedural I had ever stumbled upon. I spent a week out here with Mike Resendez. He happened to be out here in August of 2012 visiting a friend, and I had a little recorder like that, and I took him to lunch every day that week, to Langer's and Lazy Ox and some of my favorite lunch places, mostly downtown. And at the end of that week, I had a 54-page notes document of the ins and outs of the story. And at that point, I knew, okay, this is a great... Just the way you go from A to B to C, then back to A, then forward to D, then back to B. You know, the way it moves, and you never have time in an hour-long television show to do a procedural of this intricacy. I think the one thing that perhaps made me a little nervous at the top was, Tom had a pretty clear vision of authenticity. Even before he joined me in the writing process, and that was pretty organic and pretty quick. But he clearly wanted to be as authentic as possible. And while I thought the procedural would hold up to that, I was frankly a little concerned. He was talking about six protagonists instead of two, right? And he was talking about not pulling any punches. There's a scene with Mitch Garabedi and Mike Resendez, Stanley Tucci and Mark Ruffalo, where Mitch, and I, it's one of the scenes that I really am proudest of in some ways, where Mitch walks him through the legal minutiae of why some of these sealed documents are actually public. And that's a scene that challenges a viewer to keep up. But that was the vision that Tom had. And at first it made me nervous, but as we pushed farther and farther, I realized that it would be unique and would actually hopefully allow this film to stand out and be different, and in being true to life and authentic, might pop in a way that something that was more Hollywoodish wouldn't.
I just blanked out on what I was going to say. I'm terrible. It's interesting about this movie because it teaches you about investigative journalism, and like we're all journalists here, but this is a whole next level for most of us. Was it a challenge to incorporate how to tell the audience about how they go about their business and then making it an engrossing thing that you can kind of get lost in and incorporating the story in as well?
It brings to mind one of my... So I had just started working on the movie, and Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. is a good friend of mine. We worked together on The West Wing. He's a bit of a mentor. And he literally, I told him, I'm writing this great movie about when the Boston Globe journalists uncovered the Catholic Church scandal. And he said, well, he's from Dorchester, first of all. So he had all sorts of other thoughts on the scandal. But before he got to that, he was like, how are you going to make that interesting? Journalists, basically, what they do is not exciting. It's not car chases. It's, they hang around their patient. And it made, again, like I said, that's a good question. But after spending... the week with Mike, and then when Tom and I went up to Boston and started spending time with the reporters, I sort of came to the conclusion, exactly. That's exactly how we're going to make it interesting. We're going to make it boring, and that's going to make it interesting. Like, it's almost... And these reporters, I think they are such rich characters. I assume you guys have had a chance to sit with them, or if you haven't, you will. They're terrific, right? And they're wonderful people, and wonderful people to spend time with. And it's the other reason why we thought, like, hey, okay, this movie deals with some tough stuff. But you are with these reporters who are delightful. And so even though it's a tough subject, I think it's, if not entertaining, at least, a great ride, right? And I think it is entertaining.
Yeah.
And I think, don't have me say if not entertaining. I think it is entertaining, but I think it's really a great ride. Mm-hmm. And moreover, instead of it being depressing, I think it's inspiring. And so, but the only way you're going to get there is if it's true to life, as opposed to if it's trying to be, you know, Hollywood-y, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah,
is there a little bit of, like, a historical moment with Catrine, too? I mean, we were all talking about how these sorts of investigative teams, I mean, we've watched a lot of really smart, intelligent journalists kicked out of our newsrooms that worked on these sorts of teams. Is it important to sort of capture how, like, after the fact, and, all this minutia that you're mentioning, not just because, like, it's a great story, but because these stories may not happen anymore?
Well, I mean, I certainly hope they don't, you know, I certainly hope this is not the end. I hope this is sparks some conversation and sparks some revitalization. I mean, Tom and I were very cognizant, having written The Fifth Estate and thought a lot about what's happened in journalism over the last 15 years, and then Tom and I sort of went even deeper and read Clay Charkin and Emily Bell's great treatise on post-industrial journalism and really thought about, like, wow, you know, this is a problem. We've lost, you know, 15 metro dailies, you know, a dozen or more metro dailies over the last 15 years. We've lost tens of thousands of reporters, you know, and what happens? You know, what do we lose there? And, you know, Clay Charkin says, you know, he's not so worried about the New York Times. I mean, the New York Times has struggled. But he's not as worried about the New York Times staying in business. But he is worried about the local paper. And what happens when your local paper goes out of business? What happens when instead of 19 reporters covering the Sacramento legislature for the LA Times, you only have four, right? Isn't there necessarily going to be more corruption, more graft that goes unnoticed? And I think what we would like to do is remind people how important this kind of journalism is, and push people to look for a new solution so we can continue to have this kind of journalism. If you don't have the Fourth Estate watching, right, holding our, you know, governments and corporations and leaders accountable, who's going to do it, right? No one else is going to break this story, right? And for all the, you know, for all the darkness we somewhat cast on the globe as well, like, no one else is going to catch this story. So for us, we absolutely wanted to inspire people to talk about, think about, you know, at the very least, go buy your local paper, right? Buy, you know, I'm from Philly, buy the Inky, right? I subscribe to the Globe, I subscribe to the Washington Post, I subscribe to the New York Times, I read the Inky every day, you know, and click on the ads, so I'm, you know, paying for the... They don't have a paywall, I don't know why, actually, because frankly, if they did, I'd pay whatever they asked to read about my Eagles and my Phillies, but, you know...
You don't want to read about the
Yes, actually, I gotta say, yeah,
exactly. My husband's from Philly.
I know, so. It's, you know, the last couple of weeks have been a little demoralizing. But no, I mean, you know, so one, buy your local paper, and two, hopefully, we'll start to have more conversations about how can we fund this kind of investigative journalism. I know that Participant is trying to come up with a, you know, I think they're gonna throw some money at, you know, funding a journalist who will work at the Globe, and we're going to try to make an ongoing thing to do this kind of local deep digging investigative journalism. But, like, you know, maybe a couple philanthropists will come to the table. You know, frankly, like, look at what Bezos has done with the Post, right? You talk to Marty, like, I think it's been a great thing because there is an injection of life. I mean, look, a lot of that is Marty. I mean, Marty's so good. But, you know, I think they have capital and are making an effort to make that paper, you know, one of the predominant papers in the country, and that's terrific. But, like, as much as I'm thrilled to see that at the Post, I would like to see that with all the local papers as well around the country.
You mentioned did extensive time with the journalists. Did you interview also maybe, like, the victims, and did you maybe even church officials of some kind?
Yeah, pretty much everyone you see on screen we talked to. So, you know, we started with the journalists. They introduced us to Phil Saviano and Joe Crowley, who were both depicted in the movie. I took Phil out to dinner. I spent a good 4-hour dinner. In fact, most of what's in that scene comes from the tapes that I had of that dinner. I mean, Tom literally, he wrote the first cut of that scene and literally was listening to the tapes and just pulling language, right? And then we gave that script back to Phil, and Phil gave us notes, and then, you know, literally on the day was working with Neil Huff, who plays him brilliantly, and me and Tom to, like, get it right, get certain words in to make sure it's accurate. Same thing with Joe Crowley, who's wonderful, who's had a really tough 20 years, and, you know, had a long dinner with Tom and I, and again, you take the language of these people. I worked on Law and Order SVU. This is the thing we don't have time to do in 22 episode a year of television, right? But with a movie like this, we had the time to sit with these guys and really get the stories right, go back to them, show them the pieces. We also sat with lawyers. I mean, we met with Mitch Garabedian, who I'm thrilled to say is a big fan of the film, because that wasn't assured with Mitch, but it's very nice. We sat with Bob Sherman, who was Eric McLeish's partner. It was Bob Sherman and Eric McLeish who had settled a lot of these cases. We sat with Bob Sherman. He's currently the ambassador of Portugal, actually, but he was working at Greenberg Traurig and a firm before that where he did a lot of these sort of quiet settlements with Eric McLeish. And then Eric McLeish was the lead partner in these settlements. We sat with him as well. And in fact, it was only because we sat with Eric that we got the story about the 20 priests that, you know, that had been submitted in 93. Frankly, we didn't have that story. We had a number of different stories about how the Globe may or may not have been complicit, or at least deferential to the church. I think that's the better word, deferential. Strike complicit from the record, please. Deferential. But all that is now off the record. Okay, but deferential. And so we sat with, and so we had some stories about that. But, you know, Tom wanted to talk to Eric. And I was sort of worried that he was just going to spin us. I mean, if you read about him, he's a colorful character, and he does spin as lawyers do. And we sat with him, and he did spin a little bit, but very quickly he said, you know, I gave them 20 priests back in 93, right after Porter, and they buried it. And Tom and I looked at each other, and we were like, that's crazy. And we walked out, and we said, that's bullshit. That can't be true. And then I went back to the computer and went to the Globe Archive and found the story. And had to email Robbie and say, hey, we already had a draft. I mean, I think we were pretty deep in. And you know, and again, we had always planned to end the movie with some question of, could I have done more? But we emailed Robbie, and Robbie said basically what Michael says in the movie, you know, I don't remember it, but it was on my watch, and, you know, we should have gotten it,
In writing this script, you obviously did a lot of research, and in a way you were discovering things just as the characters we see are discovering them. How did any of those discoveries, whether you're Catholic or not, make you question faith and how to portray the faith, especially in such a small town like Boston?
Yeah, so I would say the best answer I can give you to that is to tell you to go talk to Richard Seip. So that week that Mike Resendez was out here, the last day of that week, we went down to La Jolla, which is where Richard Seip lives. Richard Seip is the fellow who Richard Jenkins plays in the movie. You don't see Richard Jenkins, but you hear him on the speakerphone. And Richard Seip is this guy who's a former priest and a psychotherapist who's been studying this issue for 50 years, and since the late 60s, early 70s, has been saying this is a problem, saying this is a systematic problem, saying that 6% of priests are acting out with minors, you know, some of them are pedophiles, some of them are ephebophiles, but has been pushing this story for 50 years. And literally, sitting with him and talking with him about this was revelatory, right? Because his perspective on this is revelatory. But I said to him at some point, because he's clearly a man of faith, I said, are you still a Catholic? Do you still consider yourself a Catholic? And he said, yes. He said, I don't go to church much. I'm not so welcome there. But I do consider myself a Catholic. And I said, how does that work? Just like Mike says in the movie. And he said, look, you know, the church is an institution of men. You know, men have failings. You know, and that institution is passing. Right? And he said, you know, my faith is in the eternal, and I try to separate the two. I try to separate the eternal from the passing. And it was this incredible, like, I get goosebumps now even repeating it. Like, to me, it's this incredible, it's like a wise man saying that. And frankly, at some point, for a while, Tom and I wanted to call the film The Passing, for just that reason. And I think that, you know, we really made an effort. You know, Tom's a Catholic, I'm Jewish. I'd say neither of us are really full-on practicing, but I think we are both people of some faith. And neither of us wanted to attack faith. This is not about attacking faith. This is not about attacking religion. You know, I love the Jewish religion. I love the ritual. I think Tom would probably say the same thing about the Catholic religion. You know, he's baptized his daughters. Like, I think he loves that ritual. You know, but the institution, you know, I think needs to clean up its act.
Real quick before they pull you. Sorry. We were just super quick. Were there any other spotlight stories that they that the team had uncovered that you think would make a great movie? Spotlight 2.
You know, it's funny. I think that this kind of journalism should be lauded and we should do more. I've often wondered why there's not a great if not another movie, a great television show. You can imagine a cable show about a team of investigative reporters. You know, I read one recently. There's this great book about these two reporters for the Yankee in Philly, these two female reporters, terrific, who won the Pulitzer for exposing corruption with the Philadelphia police. I can't remember the name of the book, but it's really terrific. You know, I think they're trying to make that into some sort of a movie. But, you know, there are great journalism stories everywhere. So, you know, maybe if I'm lucky, I'll get to work on another one.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Sounds like a big wolf
fund. Yeah, exactly. That's hilarious.